A lot of fans just don't understand why the team gets ace production out of some guys like Kevin Gausman and Carlos Rodon, and then seemingly lets them walk away without making much of an effort to bring them back. So we're going to address a lot of mailbag questions today, including why do the Giants do this with their pitchers? We'll get into it next.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily San Francisco Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. My name is Ben Caspick, and on this show we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also simple, passionate, and accessible to all. I'm a former contributor for the baseball statistics and analysis websites Beyond the Box Score and Rotographs. I've been podcasting about the Giants since 2015, and I'm a lifelong fan. Thank you for making Locked On Giants your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. This episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. And where we get started is by, first of all, saying if you're watching this on YouTube, it's going to look a little different because we are operating without electricity, everything battery powered here, the microphones powered by the computer's been charged, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, looks a little different. I'm going to have a hard time posting this without internet, but I'm going to find a way to get it done. So anyway, thank you for bearing with me as we experience a power outage here. But we're going to get to some mailbag questions. The first one coming from Mark, who says, any idea why the Giants wouldn't spend the money and sign their number one pitchers for the last 2 years in a row in Gausman and Rodon? We need quality starters, and they were our two best. It makes no sense to me whatsoever, especially Rodon. What's your take? So obviously this question was asked before Carlos Rodon injured himself in his first spring training start. And he, you know, the reality of what happened there kind of sort of answers the question in a way that I would answer it, which is that, I mean, I've said this a lot, and so I don't want to sound repetitive, but not everyone listens every day, even though you should. We're Monday through Friday all year long, pretty much. But basically, the track record for starting pitchers on kind of long-term free agent deals is not very good, and that there's a lot of risk associated with them, and a lot of times the pitchers, it just doesn't end up being a good contract. And you can point to a lot of examples, even in the history of the Giants, that didn't work out, like Johnny Cueto. It's also true that a lot of times they're maybe good in year one, but then it's year one is usually the best year. And so there's a couple reasons here. Number one, it's like I said, the risk there. And, you know, think of Cueto, think of Samardzija, think of the extension for Matt Cain, which was a disaster, frankly, from a performance standpoint ever since he signed it. Think of Madison Bumgarner with the D-backs. Think of Patrick Corbin with the Nationals. Steven Strasburg, that's been a complete and utter disaster. So there's countless examples I can point to of these deals kind of backfiring. And then there's two other reasons. And number one is that they've had so much success with being able to kind of get that production out of guys without having to make the long-term commitment. And so if they feel like they can, you know, find the next Kevin Gausman and the next Carlos Rodon, like each and every year, without taking on that risk, then they kind of see that as a, why should we take on the risk? And I get it from a fan's perspective. It's not ideal, and you'd rather have someone you can like grow attached to. And also the kind of, you want to say like bank that elite production, but I'm saying, I don't think that you can over the course of a 6-year deal. Like, I've compared Rodon to Patrick Corbin. If you look at Patrick Corbin's season, the year he reached free agency and then turned that into a big deal with the Nationals, that adjusted for inflation is like kind of the same deal that Rodon got for the Yankees. I mean, Patrick Corbin's season heading into free agency was similar to what we saw out of Rodon last year. And, you know, we thought of him as one of the best pitchers in the game at that moment. And now he's like literally the worst pitcher in the league. And it happened quickly. And so I'm not saying that's going to be Rodon, but it is kind of a pretty similar comparison. And just imagine if Rodon, like 3 years from now, we consider him like the worst pitcher in Major League Baseball. Jordan Zimmerman's another guy who comes to mind. He was just so good, and then he was just so bad. And it happens really fast. But Giants have been able to get good production without having to make the long-term commitment. And then you might say, well, I'm tired of like year to year having a different person kind of fill that role. The answer to that problem is homegrown talent. Think of Logan Webb. Like, he's already been here. His first season with the Giants was in 2019. So 19, 20, 21, 22. And he's got three more seasons. So that would be seven seasons of Logan Webb at minimum that you're, you know, you want to grow attached to a player, you want to buy a jersey, all that. Well, it's homegrown talent because you can go year to year with it. It's like a long-term, the player's committed, they can't leave for a long time, but as a team, you're not obligated to the whole term. Like, it's year to year. So like, if Logan Webb obviously wouldn't wish this in a million years, but if he has like a year this year where he just falls apart and injuries happen and, you know, it's hard to even imagine the scenario. Let's just say this year it happens and then next year again, just bad performance and injuries and whatever. They don't have to commit to him any longer. They're not tied to a deal. But if you sign a player to a free agent contract like the Yankees gave to Rodon, the whole thing is guaranteed. And even if he falls apart and all that, you're paying him every year for that. And so the answer is they can... they believe in their ability to kind of find pitchers and get the most out of them. Remember, Gausman came initially on a one-year, $9 million deal, became a $100-plus million player. And on down the line, they've just gotten a lot of, you know, the most out of pitchers for the most part. Not every time, but a lot of success there. And then they're just going to, if you want the long-term guys, it's going to be homegrown, and you've already got one in Webb, and you've got others coming like Keaton Wynn and Kyle Harrison. And so I think that It may not be the most popular thing in the world, but it's, I think it's probably the right thing to do, frankly. Ultimately, we'll see. I mean, it takes time to judge. Like I said, oftentimes year one is the best year. Kevin Gausman had a good year last year. We'll see how the next four seasons look. If they look great, then you might have some regrets, perhaps. But if he starts to deteriorate, then who knows? Maybe you are saying it's a good thing they didn't sign him to that deal. And not everyone's going to fail, but there's a large failure rate. And so if you do this long enough, you're going to see some failures. And so we'll just have to wait and see. The next question is going to be about the starting staff. There's so many guys, like seven starters, not counting the likes of Kyle Harrison. Who's the most expendable if, for example, Kyle Harrison is ready to come up? How are they going to make room for him if everyone's healthy? Who's the guy to go? So before we get into that, though, this episode is brought to you by FanDuel. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores and threes drained. I'd normally be telling you about what I'm seeing as a good opportunity today, but I can't access the internet right now, so I'm unable to let you know. But I just would highly encourage you to check out the app, check out the site. Really easy to use, and you can bet on so many different things with the NBA season going on. And of course, baseball coming up as well, and that's going to be something we'll talk about almost every day. And right now, the WBC, I still like the chances for Team USA, big game tonight, but that's something you can bet on as well. So don't miss your chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right, here we go. We are going to get to more mailbag questions. The next one coming from Aloof Buddha, who says, barring no injuries to the starting staff, who is the first starting pitcher that's expendable if Harrison is dominating in AAA? Does one of Manaea, Stripling, slash Wood get traded due to the fact they're here for 1 year slash only 1 year left on their deals? Obviously, Manaea and Stripling have opt-outs. And so It's a good question. I really don't see it playing out in the way that there would be a situation in which somebody ends up getting traded, although it could happen. It really could. But I think what's more likely is that underperformance or injuries are what creates an opportunity for Harrison. So there's so many different like scenarios that could play out. And like you could have Harrison struggle in AAA and then not be in line to get that call. You could have, you know, Harrison do well, and then just injuries happen and underperformance happens. And so if in that case, you know, certain guys who are underperforming might move to the bullpen, and then that creates a spot for Harrison. I also don't think they're just going to let Harrison be like every fifth day go out there and throw six innings. I think they're going to kind of baby him along. I know some people aren't a fan of that, but that's just kind of the modern way teams approach their young pitchers, is to kind of look after them and not overextend them. And so even Harrison might be a guy who goes to the bullpen and pitches, you know, three innings in relief at a time. And maybe that's how they break him in, a la like David Price of the Rays back in the day, right? Wasn't he? Yeah. I mean, the Rays used him as kind of a multi-inning high leverage relief weapon. And I don't know, Josh Hader, who became a reliever and not a starter, even though he was starting at time. Anyway, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but who is the most expendable? They have so many guys who are like in a similar category to me, with basically the guys you mentioned, Manaea, Stripling, Wood, I would say DeSclafani as well. And really and Junis is, I think, factoring. He's kind of the last on that depth chart and factors into the bullpen and not really into that starting rotation. But it just depends. I could see any of these guys having, I think they're kind of similarly likely to have a down year. They're similar players in Manaea, Stripling. Wood is coming off a really miserable season, and he had difficulty going three times through a rotation. And for him, it like truly is the last year of his deal, whereas Stripling and Manaea have the opt-out. And so, you know, if Stripling or Manaea are having a tough year, it could be tough to trade them, because teams would be saying, okay, well, they're going to exercise their opt-in. Like, they're not going to opt out because they're having a bad year. And so for Wood, that would make him an easier trade candidate. But if he's not performing well, then you're not going to get much in a trade for him either. And so I kind of see them holding on to all of these guys, and somebody will end up getting hurt, and that would probably be how Harrison would get his opportunity if he's deserving of it. So I didn't really answer your question there, but that is kind of how I see it. Next question from Dom, who says, if the Giants are in reasonable contention for a playoff spot by the trade deadline, do you expect the front office to be more aggressive in trying to acquire a game-changing type player given the fan base's response to this offseason? And I really don't think that they're going to make a move like that just in response to the fan base's response to the offseason. They're really disciplined, I think. And, you know, like, for example, backing away from the Carlos Correa deal took a lot of discipline, knowing what the fan base's response was going to be. And so in the same way, I don't think they're going to make a deal that they otherwise like wouldn't make just because of the fan base. I also have said this repeatedly, but for a like Juan Soto type player, and what was so critically important to understand about Juan Soto last trade deadline was that he had 2.5 years of team control remaining. And so it is not normal for a player that good, that young, and with that much team control left to get traded. And he was, and that's why it was like a historic return that the Nationals got in terms of, you know, basically the Padres farm system. They had some really good young talent, and they're all gone to the Nationals now to get Soto there. And so I don't think the Giants are in position to trade away like Kyle Harrison plus Luciano plus whoever, you know, Von Braun plus Luis Matos. That's basically what you're talking about. And all of them with their stock up, nobody having a down year, all of those guys, if they're having great seasons in the minors, trading them all for like 2.5 years of a player, I don't think that makes sense given where the Giants are. Padres already had this like base of superstar talent, and they kind of just added another there. The Giants they need to start somewhere. And I think they kind of need some homegrown talent to first establish itself before you're ready to make a move like that. So in that vein, I'm not sure there is a player like that who's going to become available this year. You might say, what about Shohei Ohtani? The difference is Ohtani does not have 2.5 years of team control. He has half a year of team control come trade deadline. And in fact, it's less than that. It's 2 months. And so the reality is, even though the talent, even though Ohtani may even be a better player than Juan Soto, I don't like when we say, well, he's better or not. When we're talking about elite talent, let's just put them into the elite bucket and say, you know, talent-wise, it's similar. But the difference is Shohei Ohtani would cost significantly less in a trade simply because, I mean, it is a huge deal. You're only getting 2 months of Shohei Ohtani if you were to trade for him in July. Whereas with Soto, you get those 2 months for the rest of the year, plus you get 2 more years of team control. So the cost is just so much lower when you're talking about that difference. And so I think I could see the Giants very much being a team if they're in contention and if the Angels are not. And if they're like, okay, well, you know, because from the Angels' perspective, they don't want to let Shohei Ohtani end up leaving for nothing. Because if the Angels are out of contention and they really believe he's not coming back, it's in their best interest to trade him. And so he very well could be a guy who gets traded by the trade deadline this year. And if that's true, because of what I just said, that the cost is lower than what it costs for Juan Soto by quite a bit. It's not going to be easy to acquire Shohei Ohtani by any means, but it's not going to cost as much as Juan Soto costs simply because of the team control stuff. It is a big deal to get 2 additional years of a player versus not. And so, I mean, if you gave up, like, would you give up Marco Luciano for 2 months of Shohei Ohtani? Maybe some of you are saying yes. I'm not so sure about that. But, I mean, it's 2 months. It's just 2 months. And then, like, let's say he reaches free agency and signs somewhere else. You've given up Marco Luciano. You got your 2 months of Shohei Ohtani. But if you aren't able to extend him, then that is a huge loss to give up all that potential for just 2 months of a player. So, anyway, I think for rentals like that, the Giants will absolutely be in on them, just like they were with Chris Bryant. That is exactly the scenario in which they got Chris Bryant. And note that it didn't cost all that much from a prospect perspective. It cost them something, but it wasn't like Kyle Harrison, Marco Luciano type prospects. So anyway, I think that if they're in contention, just like we saw in 2021, they will be aggressive in trying to add some talent. And if it's Shohei Ohtani, then all the better, because I mean, I think they want to sign this guy long term. I think that will be a goal of theirs. And what better way to get a head start on it by bringing him into your team, especially if you're having a good season and he can kind of experience winning with you? That could be huge. So who knows? That could be in the future for the Giants. Obviously, probably more likely than not, it doesn't happen, because there's, you know, 28 other teams that would be wanting Shohei Ohtani, maybe not that many, but there's certainly a lot of teams that would be bidding for his services. So anyway, I do see them, though, being aggressive if they're in contention. So the next question is going to be about VR and Schmidt, and what is the future there? David VR, he's going to get that opportunity. How does that create an opportunity for Casey Schmidt, who's had such a good spring and really could factor into the major leagues in 2023? So we'll get into this next question in just a minute. But first, all right, as promised, more questions and answers. OGC says, what do you think will happen with VR and Schmidt? When do you think Harrison will be brought up? And how many innings do you think they will allow him to throw? What are the chances Elliot Ramos finally figures it out? So a lot of questions here from OGC. I think VR, they've said, is in line to be the starting third baseman. He's dealing with a little bit of a hip issue, but apparently pretty mild. And they do expect him to be ready for opening day, or at least he expects that out of himself. Of course, sometimes you question with young players who are getting an opportunity, sometimes they kind of mask over or gloss over their own injuries because they don't want to miss out on this golden opportunity. So we'll see how that plays out with the hip issue for VR. Dominated in AA in 2021, dominated in AAA in 2022, and had a good September in the major leagues in 2022. And so deserving of an opportunity with the Giants moving on from Evan Longoria. And I think he's going to get that chance to start the year to be pretty much an everyday third baseman. Will it work out? I'm not sure, but I think he deserves the chance. And then Casey Schmidt represents nice kind of young insurance to have at that position moving forward. He has very little upper minors experience, though, so I think they send him to AAA. And if he dominates offensively, he will very much become an option at third. Let's say if VR struggles, then you could definitely see Schmidt get an opportunity next. And then also the fact that Schmidt is playing more and more shortstop. He played some there when Marco Luciano went down in high A last year. He's also playing there some in spring. And they seem to believe that he is a legitimate option there. And so, you know, the future of the shortstop position for the Giants is murky. A lot of scouts believe Marco Luciano is not a shortstop long term. And so if you believe that, and then you think Brandon Crawford's going to be 37 next year and he's not even signed for next year yet. So Casey Schmidt, that may be the way. And he's Brandon Crawford also dealing with a knee issue right now. And so you could definitely see if Schmidt does well in AAA offensively, that Schmidt gets an opportunity to kind of be a shortstop at the major league level in 2023. We could see that. And so there's going to be a couple kind of inroads for Schmidt to prove himself in 2023. All he has to do is go to AAA and hit, and then we'll probably see him get that opportunity this year. And then in terms of when will Harrison be brought up, hard to say, but I would say at some point before the All-Star break, we'll probably see Kyle Harrison make his major league debut. How many innings will they allow him to throw in the majors? I would say probably no more than 100, but overall in the season, I don't know. I don't have internet right now, like I said, so I can't see how many innings did he throw last year, but they'll be careful with him. I can't give you an exact number without looking at last year's innings total, but they'll definitely monitor his workload. And what are the chances Elliot Ramos finally figures it out? I'm pretty skeptical because he had just such a down year, but look, he was kind of widely regarded as a high probability top 100 prospect, high probability to be just a solid major leaguer. And he's just struggled in the upper minors to hit. And so what are the chances? I don't know, 20%, 33%. I'm kind of low on them, but he's got some pedigree and obviously a former first round pick. And, you know, hitting coaches have had success with players before, these, you know, Giants hitting coaches, and they could do it again with Ramos. It would be great if he could figure it out, but he's kind of fallen pretty significantly on the depth chart for me in the outfield. And certain guys, like as they continue to move up, like Von Braun potentially could pass Elliot Ramos on that outfield prospect depth chart. So anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thanks again for making Locked On Giants your first listen every day. For your second listen, check out Locked On Fantasy Baseball, available wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. Check me out on Twitter at Ben Kaspic, K-A-S-P-I-C-K. If you like this show, please consider rating it, leaving a review, hitting that subscribe button on YouTube, whatever you can do. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Anyway, can't wait to be with you again tomorrow, assuming we'll be able to get it done with the power outage that is ongoing here. But thanks for bearing with me. Thanks for listening today. You are now Locked On Giants.